Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Well, 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 look what it is. It's the final Sports Daily of the week, and we got Mr. Scrooge himself in a Hawaiian for a Hawaiian shirt Wednesday. Welcome in, everybody, to Sports Daily. Jacob Albrecht, Tommy Kester here. We will be joined later in the program by TJ Cleland, Brandon Zinner, Paul Savage. We know Paul Savage will be in his Hawaiian. We're looking forward to it. I'll pretend Jad's in his because it's a day to celebrate. With great college basketball yesterday, we're looking forward to some great football. Looking forward to a lot of people's favorite holiday of the year in Thanksgiving tomorrow. Hope everybody is getting to celebrate it with family and friends. Or whatever it is that you do for Thanksgiving. We're glad to be here with you one more time this week. We will not have a show tomorrow or Friday. So thanks for being here with us. The IHOP hotline, it's open for you today, and it is brought to you by IHOP and their new Indiana Jones and the Great Circle limited time menu. Different kinds of French toast, the Circle of Cinnamon there now at IHOP, 869-1240. That is the number to call. We'll give away some HTO today as well. We got all kinds of good stuff for you. Of course, KU in action last night. We'll have Shreya Salata in next segment to talk not just about that, but to look ahead to KU football this weekend. We'll make our football picks top of the next hour. It's a great day. It's a great show. We're glad to be here. We're all festive. It's Thanksgiving tomorrow. Tommy, how are you?
I'm good. I can't tell you how stupid I feel like I look right now in what I'm wearing. But you know what? Look, it's a Thanksgiving miracle. It's the day before the holiday. I'm rarely in on Wednesdays, so I've let you and Paul have this little weird, side thing that y'all do with Hawaiian shirt Wednesdays. I'm in today, the last show of the week. I figured, you know what? Might as well throw you a bone, and we'll rock a Hawaiian today.
What's the problem? Do you hate fun? I mean, what's the issue?
I hate looking bad. I hate looking stupid. But I love fun. Don't get me wrong. I love fun.
Well, I got some news for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
It's not the Hawaiian shirt that's gonna do you harm here.
That ship has sailed, I guess.
Yeah. Happy Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday, everybody. Glad to have you with us. What a game last night. So many things. You know, we talked about K. We'll start there. KU Duke. KU gets the win. They hold them off. You know, hit the free throws late. Do all the things. It was a game we knew that Kansas would be challenged in a unique way. They weren't going to be able to lean into Hunter Dickinson in that game. They were going to have to stop one of, if not the most talented, you know, young players in the country in Cooper Flagg. And they did it. And they did it well. And until Hunter Dickinson left the game, they did it really well. Now, almost the guards, we said the guards are going to have to lead the way. Boy, did they. You know, the primary guards for KU that will be utilized this year, we think, all had 8-plus points. It was really impressive. We'll get to Hunter Dickinson's, in my opinion, stupidity in just a little bit. But all in all, you take that win because stylistically, we knew it would challenge KU to do something we still aren't quite sure they'll be able to do. And they didn't do it a ton, but they hit a high percentage of their threes, Tommy, and they got it done.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing. They didn't take a ton of threes, you know, especially compared to Duke, but they made the threes that they took, and they were clutch. They were, you know, good shot selections for the most part. And so that was high level. I thought that was really, really good for the Jayhawks. Really, though, and this is something that Bill Self focused on post-game, and that I know he's going to hang his hat on, defensively, especially down the stretch, the Jayhawks played fantastic. The final couple of defensive possessions against Duke where they didn't foul, but they were able to get stops, that was massive. But then even going all the way back to the first half, the Jayhawks really locked down defensively. They made their shots, but then they also guarded really well also. And so I think that that was massive. That was major, you know, for Kansas. And they got out to double-digit leads a couple of different times in the game, primarily because they were able to get stops on the defensive end of the court.
I'm just impressed all the way around. I think if you're, you know, as we look at KU, who's been the number one team in the country, who returns all that they return, who had the recruiting class that they had. So it's you know, I don't think it's ever like national championship or bust in college basketball. I think that's silly because of the tournament they play. But as high as you can put expectations, I think we can comfortably get there with this KU team as it, you know, as it currently stands. And we thought we might have that last year, and we knew by this point, like, ooh, that's probably not going to be the case, right? And so this year, it's a lot of things, right? It's the depth, as they are, you know, at minimum 8 strong right now. I think you can go down to Coit, because I do think he's there. There will be times where they really lean into him this year. But Griffin, Badunga, both look good in that game. You have a clear allotment of minutes right now. I don't know if that's going to stay that way. I don't know if you have thoughts on that. Maybe we can ask Shreyas that too. I don't know if that allotment of minutes is what we should expect the rest of the way. I think it'll be hard to keep Griffin and Badunga to only playing 16 and 17 minutes respectively, but we'll see. It's okay right now. But it's all like pointing in the right direction. They had a game where they knew they were going to have to stop a big and shoot the threes well on the other side, and they did both of those things. And Duke will do that one thing probably better than just about anybody they play all year. And so you take that and you run with it, and you look out ahead, because there's going to be a lot of teams that KU plays where they're going to impose their will, and you know, you got to come up with an answer for Dickinson first and foremost and all of these things. That wasn't the case last night, and they still looked really good, and they came up with the big plays. On to Hunter Dickinson, Tommy. Come on, man. Like, he should have switched jerseys with that kind of play. Like, that kind of crap comes out of Duke over the years. You can't kick a dude when you're down. Like, I don't care how frustrated you are. And what's so, like, that's too big a game in too big a spot. You just, like, you cannot have that guy doing that thing in a game like that. Ridiculous.
I thought it was a terrible call. I mean, it was absolutely a flagrant one. There, it absolutely
did it on purpose, though. Well, you can't put yourself in that position.
I don't know if anybody can really judge the actual intentions behind it and if it was done intentionally or not. I think it was 1,000% a flagrant one. Was it a flagrant two that deserved an ejection from the game? I don't think so. But I do agree with you. In that spot, in that situation, you can't even be in that situation. Like, you can't even
You can't let them make that call.
You can't leave it up to the referees to make that decision on your behalf and take it, you know, basically take the game out of your hands or take whether or not you're going to be playing down the stretch out of your own hands and put it in the referees' hands. You can't, and Dickinson is an experienced enough player that he should know that. You know, that was a lapse of judgment. So regardless of whether or not he intended to kick the guy in the face or it was inadvertent or whatever it was, you can't put yourself in that situation in that kind of high leverage game at that point in the game. You just can't do it. But here's the thing. I think it's less about Hunter Dickinson and more about the other players on the team, because a year ago, let's be real frank.
Oh, for
Kansas
sure.
doesn't win that game if that happens to Dickinson at that point in the ballgame. The depth of the team and the fact that they were able to be resilient and fight off Duke down the stretch without Hunter Dickinson on the court, that tells me everything I need to know about this Jayhawks team. And, you know, it shows me that there are a lot of teams and really, honestly, a lot of Kansas teams over the years that are night and day different in November than they are in March. I'm not sure that that's this team. I think this team is great now, and I think they'll be great in March. They're resilient now. I think they'll be resilient in March. And so that was really important to me, told me a lot about the team. And honestly, even though you don't want Dickinson off the court, you don't want him in that situation, that might have ended up being one of the best things for the Jayhawks to find out more about themselves down that stretch, and maybe will propel them, you know, even more going forward.
Yeah, it's not so much the call that I'm taking issue with. It is the situation even being a thing. Like, doesn't matter what happens in that game, because what happened, right? Cooper Flagg all of a sudden opens up.
Yeah,
Dickinson leaves the floor, and he starts making some big buckets, and it did almost cost you the game. I mean, for that guy and what he is to not just this team, but to college basketball this year, which is, you know, a Naismith contender, like, you always have to make the right decisions. Always, 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 always. And that's a big expectation, but it is what it is, right? You just, like, that's your role on the team. You cannot make those kinds of mistakes in a game at any point. Now, it's November 26th, right? If things go sideways and Kansas loses that game, we would be annoyed, but it doesn't change the fact that we like the way that they were able to play that game stylistically. Right. So it's not the end of the world. It's not like this happened in a tournament game or something. So it's not that big a deal. You just, like, you can't have that. You cannot have that. And the other problem with it happening now is, and we know this in college basketball, and, you know, we expect officials to be robots. Officials are not robots. There will be, you help a narrative be created that Dickinson's kind of a dirty player. And he already had that to some degree. And so, like, you don't want that in an official's head either.
Yeah, I think that's unfair.
I'm not saying he is, and it is unfair. It's totally unfair. Yeah. It's ridiculous, but it is what it is. And all the Kansas haters out there, and there are lots of them now, will begin to feed that narrative.
The difference is that they're playing Duke in that game when Duke has, you know, a long-standing history of having dirty
players. That's what I mean. They should have said that was a Duke play.
But had it been against another team, I think it would have been more in the spotlight. I think because it happened against Duke, everybody's like, well, yeah, Duke kind of gets, you know, what they deserve a little bit, because they do it all the time, or at least they have historically. So I think it blows over. I don't think it's a big deal. I thought the call was weak. Like I said before, absolutely should have been a flagrant one.
I'm being dead serious here. I was in a room full of people last night. Every single one of them thought he was getting tossed as soon as the replay happened. So I'm not here to say it was a flagrant one or a flagrant two or anything like that. That's not the point that bugs me. The point that bugs me is you cannot put yourself in that position anyway. But I do think like four or five people that were around, like every single person. Yeah, he's going to get tossed for that. And initially I was like, really? You think? I don't. And he did. And I'm like, okay, well, so you just don't do that anymore. Like, let that be the last time. And this is a good time for that to happen. And I'll ask Shreya, like, because I haven't gone back. It was such a late finish. I haven't listened to the post game or gone through all that stuff. So I'm curious to see what the team had to say about it after the game. We'll ask Shreya next as he joins us for his regular weekly visit, our KU insider. He's going to talk KU football this weekend as well. Boy, it's kind of all on the line here, isn't it? For KU, the football team this weekend, it's a busy time for them. It's a busy time for us all. I say next, it's bottom of the hour for Shreya. So we'll get to Shreya and all of that as we return. Don't go away. We're going to come back. We have all kinds of stuff. We're gonna get dig in the second hour as far as picks with the Chiefs, but let's look at the Chiefs. Steve Spagnuolo talked yesterday. Let's look at Chiefs Raiders, kind of an early look to Black Friday football when we return. It's a jam-packed Wednesday before Thanksgiving. Last show of the week, everybody. Tune in, chime in, I should say, however it is that you want. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up. Thanks to Tommy for participating in the wonderful tradition of Hawaiian Shirt Wednesdays. We'll be right back. On your way to work, want to keep listening to Sports Daily even after you park the car? With the Odyssey app and Odyssey.com, you can. Just download the app, visit Odyssey.com, search for KFH. Download the Odyssey app today to get started. You can download the show in podcasted form. We know a lot of people are doing that. We appreciate it. Thanks for being here with us as we get you ready for a long weekend of sports. Essentially, it's what are we creating then? A four-day weekend of sports. We've got college basketball, college football, NFL all over the next 4 days. So we'll get you all ready for it. We'll make some picks next segment. Shreyas Lada joining us in just a little bit at the bottom of the hour. So Tommy, real quick before we get into picks, the Raiders game. You know, I think the expectation is we still see Pacheco and maybe a Minshew this weekend. Haven't heard anything to take us off of that. Pacheco was kind of a late scratch last week. You know, there was initial thought he could go. He's a full participant in practice, as is a Minshew yesterday. Normally that makes you think, okay, they're going to play. And then, you know, they kind of pulled the wool out from under us last week. So I guess we'll see it when we see it.
Yeah.
That'll help.
Yeah. It looks like both of them are at least on track to play.
But they were, at least Pacheco was on track last week too. And I'm like, okay, like I know it's Carolina and maybe you're trying to hold him back, but after what we saw in Carolina, like let's not hold anything back here. Let's go ahead and get him out there. Now let him play in a limited capacity, right? Like let him start the game. Let him have, I don't know, 9-10 carries, ease him back into it. That's fine, but you might need him. So you might as well suit him up.
Yeah. I think that really the good thing with Pacheco, at least, and the running game with Kansas City is that I don't feel like you absolutely have to push him to get him back. Minshew's a little bit of a different story because the pass rush has been such an issue. If it were me and I'm ranking urgency on getting these guys back, for me, it's a Minshew number one and Pacheco number two.
Yeah, I probably agree with that. I just like I hope a Minshew comes in and we heard from Spagnuolo, and Spags was more about, you know, his frustration seemed to be that they couldn't get off the field on those third downs. So he was sort of kind of like isolating it to the third down plays and the fourth down play that they didn't get off the field as what he felt like they should have done a better job of. And so he's right. And we know the pass rush needs to get better. I mean, it's interesting what will happen with the Minshew, because I guess Uche just steps up because you're not going to take Karloftis off the field.
No, you can't do that.
Right? So,
but you know, like I did notice, and I don't know if you looked this up, but at least last week, and I know it's been trending down over the last few weeks, Felix Anudike Uzama is getting fewer and fewer snap counts as the week goes on. In fact, I don't remember the exact number in the Panthers game, but I want to say it was like less than 20% of the defensive snaps he was on the field. That's not the way it was in week one, week two. You know,
right.
It's progressively gotten lower and lower.
Yeah, it's been a tough go of it for him. But Minshew, look, you're talking about a guy who had 7 sacks in 11 games last year. It'll be nice to at least get him in the rotation. Right, get him in there, rotate him in, however it's going to happen. Somebody has to get some pass rush. It just doesn't make a lot of sense that they're not getting any from Jones and Karloftis at this point. Like, I don't know why that's happened. I can't figure that out. What teams are doing to take them away or whatever it is. And I guess it brings up the bigger question of, like, at some point, do we expect the defense to be more like it was early in the year? Or is it going to be more like it has been lately? I honestly don't know what I think.
I think it's going to be more like it's been lately. I think really the only thing,
big problem,
I think the only thing that can really be improved again is the pass rush. If they can figure out a way to get Chris Jones loose and be able to get more pressure off the edge. Well, it doesn't, because I mean, it does at least in the terms of the pass rush. The secondary is not going to get any better.
But every secondary is going to get cooked if there's no pass rush.
I understand that. You can put the secondary in better situations, and that's good. But the talent level of the secondary is not going to get any better between now and the end of the year. They've lost Jalen Watson. Just watching the way that Nazi Johnson and Chamari Connor, I mean, they're trying really hard, but there's a deficiency there with those guys. Brian Cook really hasn't done a whole lot over the last few weeks. And Trent McDuffie, the lion's share of the secondary's burden is on his shoulders. And while he is great, he's not able to be in four places at once, right? So the talent level of the secondary is not going to get any better. I think that if you can improve the pressure that you get on the quarterbacks, that can help put the secondary in better situations. But it's not like that talent level is getting any better between now and the end of the year.
There's no question, though, that they'll play better if they're not constantly being put in bad situations, which they are right now. Like, not only, yes, have you had an injury issue and all these things, but right now, like, there isn't a secondary in the world that will find success usually without some sort of pressure on a quarterback. I mean, guys eventually are going to get open. And so that's why the Chiefs are having to predictably blitz more. And I think teams are handling that better and all of these things. So we'll see. Spags, the other thing Spags did was give a lot of credit to Bryce Young. And that was that he opened. He said, honestly, like he was really good against us. And he was. He's playing better, but they're going to play much better quarterbacks than him in the postseason. They will not play a much better quarterback against the Raiders on Black Friday. And, you know, that's what we'll watch for. As we get into that game, and we'll pick it. It is a massive spread. And I still, as we sit here, you know, a half hour before we make those picks, I have no idea what I'm going to do with this game. None. No idea how to pick that game. But it'll be just one of six. We'll do those picks coming up top of the next hour. We should have Shreyas Lada coming here in just a few minutes. So we'll have that. We'll talk about the KU Duke game. We'll talk about the KU Baylor game coming up this weekend. Is it's like a playoff game for KU. I think you can think of it that way. They got to go win in a place they never do, and they got to go win if they want to play in a bowl game. So it's all out there. It's kind of a fun set of circumstances for KU football this weekend, but we'll get into all that with our KU insider Shreyas Lada when we return. It's a Wednesday. It's Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday here on Sports Daily. We appreciate you being with us, and we'll be right back.
It's that time, Sports Daily, getting all the inside information on the Kansas Jayhawks. Let's go now to the KU football and basketball beat writer from the Kansas City Star, Shreyas Lada.
And welcome back in, everybody. Happy Wednesday to you. Big day tomorrow, of course. Hope everybody's able to celebrate and have fun. We bring in Shreyas Lada here. We got a lot to talk about. We got a big football game coming up this weekend. We had a big basketball game last night. Shreyas, KU gets it done against Duke. You know, I know how you feel about KU's need to shoot the three. There's not a team that was going to force them to do that likely more than Duke was going to last night. They did. KU hit a high percentage of them. It was good enough. Got to think you're pretty happy about the way KU played, because stylistically, that was a really, really interesting matchup going in.
Yeah, I think it was a phenomenal kind of game plan on both ends of the court for KU basketball. I think they did a really good job of, you know, when the guys who don't score, KJ Adams, DeJuan Harris, they stepped up, because it felt like Duke was essentially saying, Hunter Dickinson is not going to beat us. AJ Store is not going to beat us. But DeJuan Harris, and if KJ Adams beat us, that's fine. And that's why Duke's defense is so, so good. And as we saw, Hunter was struggling throughout most of the game before his ejection. And KJ did KJ Adams things, including making four jump shots, which I don't think I've seen him make four jump shots since I've joined the KUB. I think that was the best I've seen his jumper look ever. He was phenomenal on the other end. I wrote a whole story about it, but, you know, I called it the Cooper Flag rules, a kind of reference to the Jordan rules. And it's fascinating how good KU was on defense against Cooper Flag and that Duke squad. And I mean, he just looked uncomfortable. He had 2 points at halftime on two shots. He ended up 13 points, five rebounds, three assists, and four turnovers. I knew going in that I thought KU would have a good chance against Cooper Flag, because KJ is such a great defender, but he has the strength on a freshman guard that is 17 years old. It's one of those games that I bet you Cooper Flag's going to say, hey, I'm going to look back on this tape, and this is the thing I'm going to grow from for the rest of the season. And when I'm playing the NBA, this is how I'm going to, you know, identify how to play against defenders who are stronger, bigger, better than me. He's 17 years old, but, you know, KU put the book out on how to beat Cooper Flagg. The issue is most college basketball teams don't have a KJ Adams.
Yeah, he's a unicorn. I mean, he is, and he was awesome last night. Hunter Dickinson made a big mistake. I have not listened to post game yet. I haven't gone through that with the late finish. What was the vibe? Because to me, it was a really stupid play on his part. But Tommy didn't like the call, and a lot of people didn't like the call. I get all that, but I just feel like he can't put himself in that position. Did he talk after the game? What was Bill Self saying about that situation? Because you just can't do that in that spot.
No, Hunter didn't talk after the game, but Bill Self said that he felt like he deserved at least a flagrant one. He said it's a coin flip decision between a one or two. He didn't think it was quite a two, but he understood it. You know, I think he got the idea. I think initially, as you saw in the reaction that Bill Self had during the game, he said he saw it on the screen, which I don't understand. Apparently the score wasn't showing or whatever in the arena, which is so weird to me. But he saw it on the screen above, and you could see him kind of protest, which makes sense. But I think after re-looking at it again and kind of having the benefit of foresight of kind of seeing how everything played out, it seems like he was absolutely clearly deserved at least a flagrant one. You know, we can argue semantics between one and two. I don't think he's not going to get suspended because it's up to KU at this point.
Yeah.
That's not a worry of mine, but I thought it was an incredibly stupid play by Hunter Dickinson, by a guy who's 24 years old, and there's no reason for that. You know, they need him out there, and they barely hung on because they don't have the offense to kind of keep him going against a team like Duke consistently.
Well, I think the bottom line, Sharius, is that a year ago, Kansas wouldn't have won that game had that happened to Hunter Dickinson. They did not have the depth. They did not have the personnel to be able to sort of pick up the slack. And I think although it was a bad situation, Dickinson, I agree, shouldn't have put himself in that position to begin with. I didn't agree that he should have been ejected, but still, you can't be in that kind of situation with the experience that you have. That's not the right place to be in. I do think that could actually be important for the Jayhawks moving forward because they still won that game without him. We've known how talented Kansas is. I'm not sure that we knew until last night how resilient this Jayhawks squad is and the fact that they were able to pick up the slack with the guard play, making the shots, and then really, most importantly, defensively down the stretch in those final couple of defensive possessions. Those were huge, all without Dickinson on the court.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And Flory played a phenomenal game. I've been as high on Flory Badunga as I think anybody on the KU beat, and with good reason. I think he's a archetype that Kansas has lacked for years, a rim-running big man that can play above the rim. And he's just phenomenal to watch. I mean, he had great defense in closing moments, that KJ Adams and Flory tandem defense in, like, I think the 15 seconds left where Duke turned over the ball was really, really good. Playing defense without fouling, getting crucial rebounds. I think he ended up with 8 rebounds in the game. I was really impressed by his poise. But on top of that, you know, you have guys stepping up like Rylan Griffin in key moments, making tough shots time and time again. KJ Adams putting together, positions where Kansas can come out there and score because of key rebounds. I thought it was a really impressive win because to me, it showed that this Kansas team is equipped to deal with disaster. And disaster is Hunter Dickinson, their best offensive player, or at least their easiest offense on the court, is just dump it down low and let him go to work. He was gone against the best defensive team in the nation coming into the game. And you could see how good they are defensively. Like Duke, talent-wise, I think is probably the most talented team in the nation. I think it's just Bill Self coach circles around, the Duke coach. And I think that's just, a little bit of Bill Self's, expertise. And I was very impressed with Kansas after last night's win.
I think that's fair. So let's stack it up against last year and all the things that KU struggled with. The depth looks better. The 3-point shooting certainly looks better. Do you think we're seeing things settle into what we'll see for the entire season? Or do you still envision Griffin and Badunga and Coit maybe growing, probably more Griffin and Badunga growing those roles a little bit? And, are we looking at the 7 or 8 guys that we're going to see all year? Anybody else have a chance to play their way into the rotation?
I don't think there's a ton of people that could really play their way. I mean, I guess maybe Shaquille Moore, because he's a good defensive guard. He could this team, but it seems like he's out indefinitely with the injury that he has. I'm very curious to see what happens with him, but I think the rotation could be, you could be kind of interchangeably have AJ Story and Riley Griffin in that starting lineup, depending on who they're playing. I think AJ did a really good job last night after a little bit of a tough start, that turnover and a missed shot, but he kind of got it together. And Riley had a really bad first half. If you remember that shot he took, which was, to me, was just incredibly dumb of a decision, because you're a guy that's been on an Alabama Final Four team. You're taking a transition three with 18 seconds left. Like, what are we doing here? Like, you should know better. And he went out there in the second half and he shut down everybody, including me, and did a really good job of making key shots, doing a good job of keeping Cave's offense alive. And I really think we haven't seen the best version of Riley Griffin, AJ Storr, Diggy Coit, or Floyd Badunga for this Kansas team. And to me, that is especially really scary for college basketball. I don't know if all of them are going to be clicking at the same time. Maybe they'll have different spurts throughout the season, but I think, you know, there is a lot more we can get out of them, that Kansas can get out of them this coming year.
DeJuan Harris, Shreyas, led all KU scorers with 14 points. He added 9 assists, so 1 assist away from a double-double. But he's not, you know, he's not the big playmaker that the other guys are, you know, especially guys like Griffin and Storr and Mayo. But he's just the model of consistency, and he's somebody that, with that veteran experience, I've been way impressed watching him through the first few games of this season as the kind of that general of the team and that veteran leader that Bill Self always likes to have. And I think that in a big spot like last night against Duke, I mean, he showed why he is the leader of this team.
Yeah, I was really impressed. I think DeJuan has played pretty well to start the season. I think he's kind of played his spots of when to be aggressive, when not to be aggressive in offense. He talks about it where he's differential because his offense is so loaded. But I think he felt it, you know, in that moment against Duke, that he had to play aggressive basketball on the offensive end. He had to look for a shot. He had to take shots. I am very impressed with DeJuan's ability to kind of pick his spots. I think 2 years ago, he wasn't quite as good at that. And I don't think he was even good at that as last year. You know, he had moments where he could put the offense on, but I feel like this year he just knows when to kind of press the gas a little bit. And I think that is going to be a really big thing for Kansas when they have these kind of scoring droughts or maybe dig games where AJ Storr and Hunter Dickinson are not really playing up to their capabilities. Like we saw last night, I think Hunter really was not that good. AJ was pretty good, but Hunter probably played his worst game of the year, I think,
which was predictable a little bit, right? That's why we liked this matchup, because we knew Duke could do that. Like, and they'll do it better than most teams can, but they're big, right? Like that's the kind of team that's going to be able to take Hunter out. I want to talk about, I know you guys brought up KJ Adams. I want to go back to it and just like curiously, do you think there's a world where, and we've kind of seen, like, I feel like we saw it a little bit with maybe like Marcus Garrett. Do you think KJ could become the kind of defender where they just say, you know what, just go guard their best player, outside of that being like a point guard? But in general, like, if, you know, otherwise, could they just use him that way?
I think that's what they do, to be honest with you. I mean, DeJuan talks about it. They switch 1-4 with him. You know, 2 years ago, he was playing center as a 6'6", 6'7" guy. I think he is so invaluable for this KU team. I think Kansas fans, they're, you know, the debate of whether he should be in the starting lineup, to me, is absolutely ridiculous. The moment you tell me the KJ Adams should not be in the starting lineup is the moment I discount your basketball opinions. No disrespect whatsoever, but that is one thing I just don't disagree with. I've been a fervent KJ Adams is a very important player for this Kansas team, a very important player for the last 2 years Kansas teams. People want to focus on the rebounding. Sure, he can be better on that end. People want to score in the scoring. I don't care. He's not your first scorer, your second scorer. He's your third or fourth. Last year, he averaged 13 points per game. He's averaging 8.5 this game, this year. He can be a little better on the scoring end, but he's not looking for a shot because this defense or this offense is loaded. I think what KJ Adams does well is something that nobody else on this Kansas team can do. He can guard guards. He can guard bigs. He can do guard the forwards. Who can do that on this Kansas team? Nobody else. He can play, be a secondary creator on offense because his offense, his passing ability is really, really nice. He has great energy. He's a hustle guy. I just don't understand. It's unfathomable to me that KJ Adams is not looked at as the second or third most valuable player on the court for Kansas. I think if you had a, if you were taking off Hunter Dickinson off this team and you replaced him with a wing or a comparable big man, I think KU would be worse off than if you took off KJ Adams off this team and, you know, replaced him with a normal four man or whatever. I really think that, because I think there's so much he does that doesn't show up on the box score. And I am so kind of enamored by his talent that I think he's an NBA guy. He's like Draymond Light. If he can have any semblance of a jump shot, why don't you put him in the NBA and just say, go out there and be a bulldog for like 25, 15 minutes a game, you know, like he can be that guy. The rebounding thing is going to be the biggest conundrum with him, but I think it won't matter in the end because Kansas is so talented across the board. And if they can do a better job with group rebounding, I think it kind of disqualifies how much that's going to matter. I think that's this thing that people love talking about. I personally don't care. I don't care about the jump shooting either. I think it's a bonus if he hits jump shots, but I really, really think he's going to be such a weapon for this Kansas team on the defensive end this year, like he's been the last few years.
Let's talk football, Sharius. 3 weeks in a row, 3 ranked opponents, 3 wins for the Jayhawks. They're 1 win away from a bowl game, which when they were 1-5 or 2-6, you know, that was, I think, so far out of the mindset of just about everybody. But here they are knocking on the door with the road trip to Waco this weekend against Baylor, with an opportunity to make it to a bowl game. I certainly didn't see this coming. I thought that they would continue to improve, but I, you know, winning the way that they have against Iowa State and BYU and then Colorado at Arrowhead. I mean, it's been a wild couple of weeks for the Jayhawks.
It's been absolutely nuts. And as somebody who had them winning 11 games, it's absolutely frustrating yeah. that it's happening now, because I'm now like, well, you know, selfishly, I don't love the idea of being in Birmingham or wherever for Christmas, you know, after thinking I'd be in Arlington this time, August, sure. You know, but I've been really impressed with them. I think it's one of those things that people love to talk about the Big 12 and the conference. I'm an SEC guy. I went to Georgia. I get it. But this conference is so fascinating where it's wide open, and it makes, you can see that with the way Kansas is playing. They can go out there and beat anybody. They have the talent to beat anybody on any given Saturday. And I think you go in and they go out there and do the improbable, 3 straight games, ranked opponents, they defeat them. Now you're looking at, well, maybe they can beat this Baylor team. Like, it, to me, it's like, I didn't believe it until the Colorado game happened. I think I was a little skeptical of what KU was and what it could be, but they came out there and they made Shador Sanders and Colorado and Travis Hunter look ordinary. The least amount of points he scored all game or all season was 21. Kansas did that. The defense wasn't particularly good, but they showed up in the moments that mattered. And I think that's what the difference between this Kansas team right now is between the moments before, is they wouldn't show up in those key moments. They've shown up in these key moments. They seem to figure it out. And I feel, if I was a Kansas fan, I'd feel good about this team going to Waco. They've never beaten Baylor in Waco before. They're 0-10. It's a tough place for Kansas to play. But I think Kansas has a great shot to come out there with at least a win or at least a close game. And I really am curious to kind of see how it plays out, because Baylor's pretty talented and balanced across the board. I think they're averaging 40 points per game in the last 5. It's going to be a fun matchup Saturday.
It's going to be tragic if they don't win that game. Like, for real. Like, honestly, like, it almost feels like the pressure's back on now, like it was early in the year. If they get all the way to this point and can't go to Waco and beat Baylor, it's going to be a tragedy. Like, it will be so sad, I think, for everybody involved, if they're not at this point now playing in a bowl game. I don't know. I mean, Kansas, and that's the thing. Like, Kansas is talented enough in this league that legitimately, if they play the way that they should be able to impose their will on anybody. They just did it against Colorado. Like, why can't they do it against Baylor? I think it's all KU this weekend. They have everything's on the line for them, and they've reestablished how talented they are.
Yeah, I kind of agree. You know, like, there's a lot on the line because you have guys who are leaving. What, there's 30 guys leaving or seniors, potentially 15 or 16 starters. Like, you don't know what's happening with Jalen Daniels. He's staying, is he going? We have no idea where, if he's even entered the transfer portal, is he going to the NFL? There's so much for this Kansas team that, to me, if momentum is a real thing in sports, which I believe it is, I know that's on a debate all the time, there, it just feels like it's impossible to topple the momentum that Kansas has right now. I don't care that Baylor's won five straight. Kansas has won three straight versus ranked opponents, and arguably they're the most, or up there, talent-wise with anybody in the Big 12. This is the team that I thought they would be when I had them going 11-1. And I, for me, I'm going to be thinking about this Kansas team for the rest of my life, because I would be like, man, I really should be covering this team in Arlington, you know, in December or whatever, and covering a potential college football playoff squad. I mean, this conference was wide open, and I think Kansas players are going to be thinking about this thing forever too, and the coaching staff, because this was the year for Kansas to do the improbable. And next year is going to be, I think, an interesting year filled with a lot of rebuilding with the transfer portal and the class they got coming in. So right now, you have to end the season with a win against Baylor. And then wherever you play, it doesn't really matter. You've already done something that nobody thought was possible 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, and I'm being unfair to Baylor. I mean, some of those wins in those five are good, but I don't even care just because I'm with you. Like, Kansas is clearly one of the most talented teams in this league, and they're finally playing better. So we'll see. That game's this weekend, Trius. What do you have going for? I know it's a busy time. What all do you have up at the KC Star right now?
Yeah, I have a big story on how Kansas shut down KJ Adams. Or sorry, not KJ. KJ Adams and Kansas shut down Cooper Flagg. I called it the Cooper Flagg rules, kind of in the reference, a little tongue-in-cheek reference to the Jordan rules. Kind of broke down the tape there. I'll have a breakdown of Kansas versus Baylor with former Kansas quarterback Carter Stanley talking about it. I know he's excited about that too. And a lot of Duke Kansas stuff on the website, from the ejection stuff to the takeaways. It's been a busy couple of days. I'm hoping to recharge tonight and tomorrow and get back to it, getting back to Kansas on Friday morning. Should be a fun one.
Such a fun game last night. Trius, we appreciate it. We'll do it again next week. We'll have a lot to talk about next week, too, because we'll know if KU's going bowling, and we can start to guess at some of that kind of stuff and get ready for the college basketball season to ramp up even more. We appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving. Happy holidays, and we'll see you next week.
Absolutely. You guys as well. Thank you.
There goes Trius Latta. Tommy, I joked yesterday. It felt like a Sweet 16 lineup in the top 25 yesterday of college basketball. Is what, like, if you just looked at it, I think there were eight games and they all felt like they could be. Creighton goes down.
Yeah.
UConn goes down again. A&M goes down. Alabama beats Houston in an overtime thriller. Iowa State survives against Dayton. Like, Auburn beats North Carolina in the late game. Like, it felt like we were watching the Sweet 16 last night.
My wife and I were watching the KU game, and it got over with. And then she saw the Auburn North Carolina players warming up out in Maui. She was like, wait, there's another game? What time does this game start? I'm like, well, they're in Maui. Like, it's a late game. This is feast week. 10? It's what we do.
Yeah, it was so good. Man, it was good. It was good across the board. And it filled your cup in so many ways. Like, the villain Dan Hurley loses again. Like, all these different things that just kind of get you fired up as a college basketball fan. It was so cool. All right, let's make some picks when we return. We've got the gang coming back. On the way out, let's give away some HTO. You can win a free iced tea. You can win a free Reign coffee, iced or hot. One of each of those, by texting the keyword TEA to the short code 20357. While you're in today, if you swing by, make sure you grab your gallons. The store will be closed on Thursday. So make sure you get in there and get those gallons if you're looking for Thanksgiving. You can enter this contest once per day. Message and data rates apply. Good luck. We're coming back. We're making football picks. Don't go away. Sports Daily, hour number two, coming your way.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, sports bettors, ready for some picks destined to fail? It's time to hear what the Sports Daily staff thinks of the weekend games.
Boy, if you're watching on the video stream right now, you just hang it right in the Louvre. We are celebrating a Wednesday, making picks. It's a Hawaiian shirt Wednesday all around. I know we have Brandon just via audio, but we're going to pretend like he's got his Hawaiian rocking and rolling right with the rest of us. Man, doesn't get any better, boys. We got football. We got basketball. It's feast week. We got NFL games all day tomorrow. We're all going to stuff our faces. This is it. This is the great time of year. And because we're not having a show on Thursday or Friday, we're going to make our picks today. So, Jad, I know we might as well get this over with. Tommy's been texting the group here for about 4 days. I think we need to put him on the injury report for a busted rotator cuff for patting himself on the back. But can you tell us, Jad, what happened last week?
Oh, well, just in very short terms, Tommy won the week 6-0.
Let's go, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, did a fantastic job on those islands. And, things really worked out for him. Unfortunately, not so good for everybody else. TJ Brandon both broke even. So good news there, but Jacob 2-4, Paul 2-4. Paul, your lead is starting to crumble a bit.
Well, what is my lead? Tell me what do I got right now?
I believe you're only 3 games up.
3?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's your
holy. It's a good thing I built up a nice lead. I'm in a slump, guys. I've tried everything in the book. I'm in a slump. I don't know what to do, but this is the week I have that feeling. It's Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving has always been good to me. Just look at me and you can tell.
Look, it's good for everybody. And it's a marathon, not a sprint. We do these things. Tommy, you get to have 6-0 this week, and we don't get to make fun of you for 0-6 for a while.
I appreciate that.
So enjoy that. And you get to lead us off as we hit the music and get into it. You win last week, you go first. The challenge tomorrow, the best game of the day, is Miami headed to chilly Green Bay. Miami's playing well, fellas, and they're back in the playoff hunt. But Tua's got to go play in the cold. Is this the one where you can sort of buck that trend? 3-point dogs up on the road.
Yeah, I mean, look, like Green Bay is a solid team. We've known that all year. They're probably just a step behind the Lions, I would say. And I know the Vikings are there too. But they've been solid all year long. That being said, Miami is resurgent with Tua. I know they're going and playing at Lambeau, but I actually like the Dolphins and the points on the road. So I'm going to take Miami here in this. I think that just knowing the way that they've been able to get that offense rolling the last couple of weeks with Tua healthy again, I like their chances a lot. I'm going to go Miami and take the points.
Yeah, I'll go next here. I just have to see it from Tua one time. Like, you know, I just need to see them go to a cold weather environment and win that kind of game. It feels kind of like a playoff game to me for them. I certainly think they're capable, but I got to see it before I'm going to do it. I'll lay the 3 for Green Bay at home, especially I think it's supposed to be pretty cold up there. And I don't know if there's anything coming with that cold. TJ, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to lay the points with the Packers there as well. They have only lost to the Lions in the last like 2 months, I think is their only loss. And the Dolphins have looked good the past 2 games, but the Dolphins have also played 2 really bad teams. And the cold and everything, I think that the number's way too low. I'm taking the Packers.
Brandon, where are you at with this one?
Oh, well, I do not know where Paul is going on this, but for the sake of giving Tommy an island on a team that's watching the game, I'm going to the cold weather. It's going to be teens with that night game, but I'm going to roll with the Dolphins.
All right, so there's the Dolphins. No islands here, Paul, but you can break the tie.
You know something? Weather's always a big deal. Am I a fan of Love? No, he has not won me over yet. I think he has the potential of being a great quarterback in this league. He has not won me over to that point where I can definitely say that is the particular case. Tua always worries me, you know, with head injuries, but it's also very, very cold. It's a team going up. But Miami's playing well. Miami has, if I was to judge the two teams, Miami has overall team speed. You guys know I'm a sucker for speed. I'm going to take Miami.
Yeah, look, it's a good game. I'm excited about the game. I think it's a kind of, I don't want to say prove it game for the Packers, but, you know, they get to hold court at home. All right, Vegas Chiefs, that'll be Black Friday. I think it's my turn to go first. And, guys, I do not know what to do with this game. Now the Chiefs have a kicker injury. I think I'm going to take the points. Like, I don't, they got a kicker injury now. Like, what if they can't kick field goals? Is that a factor? And they got to maybe go for it more often. The Chiefs are going to win this game, but I can't lay 12. I just can't lay 12 with this team. It seems foolish as much as on paper. I feel like they're going to beat them by 3 touchdowns. I got to take the points and just, ugh. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. TJ?
This is the same argument you made when Harrison Butker got injured as well. So I don't know what you have against backup NFL kickers. Like, you think that they are middle schoolers that they just can't kick field goals. It's such a little part of what the Chiefs do, and I'm going to say that, and they're going to lose by a field goal now that I'm saying that out loud. But in the same breath, I'm still with you in this one. You know, the Chiefs are just chronic non-coverers. I think that you just can't pick the Chiefs to cover double digits anymore because they're just going to find a way not to. It felt like the line last week was way too big, and it was a really good line until the final minute there. But I think that they're not going to cover 12. They'll probably win by 10, but they're not covering 12.
I mean, Brandon, I think the easy part of that is the Chiefs should have covered against Carolina at 11 on the road last week until they just didn't. So I guess technically they should be able at home to cover against the Raiders without a quarterback or whatever. Which side of this are you on?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, it's either going to be Aiden O'Connell with an arm injury, or it's going to be Desmond Ridder, who has shown no competence to be an NFL quarterback. I think this is a game where the Chiefs have an ability to get up 17-21. It's them just being able to hold on and not give up a backdoor cover. Give me the Chiefs.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the logical pick, Paul. The Chiefs should win this game by 20 points. Question is, will they? Yeah. You taking the points? You taking the Chiefs?
Well, listen, psychologically, let's talk a little psychoanalyzing here for just a second, and that is the Chiefs have just come off something that's very rare, a loss. They're not used to that. You know, sometimes that makes a team regroup. It's happened many, many times. Regroup, refocus. Guys, what's going on? We should have won that game. And I'm telling you right now that is big, big, big. The Chiefs' role, and by the way, if I was to say, would you consider Las Vegas to be one of the in the top 5 worst teams? What would you say, Tommy?
Well, yeah, they've got tons and tons and tons of issues.
Tons of issues. So with that being said, and because Tommy has agreed with me, I'm taking Kansas City, and I'm going to go ahead and give the 12 points. And I don't think, quite frankly, I'm kind of with Brandon. I don't think that's enough points. I'm taking Kansas City.
Yeah, the most curious thing about that pick is Kansas City won the game last week. You know, they didn't lose the
game. Oh, that's right. But they didn't cover. But they didn't cover.
It did not cover. That's correct. Tommy, are you going to give the points here? What do you like? I don't know if anybody. I don't know if you've been as confused on this one as I have. But I don't know what to do. Like, the Chiefs just aren't beating people the way they're supposed to. I kind of need to see them do it. Where do you want to lay the points? You comfortable with 12?
Well, let's go back to just 1 month ago. The Chiefs played the Raiders in Arrowhead, and the Chiefs beat them by a touchdown. Now, that was Gardner Minshew starting for the Raiders at quarterback. He had a good game. He had 2 touchdowns, no picks, threw for over 200 yards. The running game did nothing for the Raiders in that game. Alexander Mattison, Trey Tucker, they did nothing at all. The Chiefs shut them down defensively. Aiden O'Connell, I don't know exactly if he's going to be able to be effective coming off of that injury. And even if he was healthy, I'm not sure how effective he would actually be. I understand all of the rationale about the Chiefs not being able to cover numbers, and they only beat them by a touchdown a month ago. This game is in Vegas, blah, 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 blah.
No, other way. They played that first.
They played in Vegas. This one's at Arrowhead. But yeah. I can't do is I cannot I can't pick the Raiders. It just is against everything that I do. So I'm going to take the Chiefs. I'm going to lay those points. I'm not optimistic about it. I think the Chiefs will win the game. I'm not optimistic that they'll cover, though, but I'm still going to take Kansas City, and I'll lay those points.
Caveat for me, if it's Ritter, I'm taking the Chiefs, but we'll see what it is. Like, Ritter's terrible. So we'll see. I mean, there'll be other ways to bet this game, in my opinion, other than trying to mess with that line. All right, the other one, the game of the week in the NFL, Philadelphia-Baltimore. Two of, if not the most high-powered offenses this year. TJ, you're up first on this one. The Ravens are 3-point home favorites. I think both of these teams answered some questions last week. What do you think here?
I think that my exact quote in the group message last week when you sent out the picks is that I said that Philadelphia was my triple hammer of the week, and I'm just going to do it again because Philadelphia is just playing really, really good right now. I know the Ravens just looked really good on Monday Night Football, but I would take the Eagles outright in this game. I'm not going to, but I'm going to take the points.
Okay, Brandon, you agree? We'll get Brandon reconnected here in just a minute. Paul, Eagles, Ravens, you're getting three if you take the Eagles. Which way are you leaning?
Well, Baltimore has been one of the toughest teams to read because they've had games where, quite frankly, they just didn't look like a contender for the Super Bowl championship, and particularly with two of the best offensive players in the entire league in Henry and Lamar Jackson. And so they have been up and down, and I think a very, very difficult team to predict. However, Philadelphia has seemed to have gotten their consistency going. They're playing well. They've got great offensive weapons. I'm going to go ahead and take Philadelphia and give the 3 points because I just can't read Baltimore very well.
I know we've got some sell issues with Brandon. I think we got you back, Brandon. Which side of this one are you on? Man, we lost him again. Okay, we'll get Brandon to text in his picks here. No big deal. Look, Paul, you said you took Baltimore, Paul?
No, I took Philadelphia.
Took Philadelphia. Look, I'm gonna ride with the Ravens here at home. I think it's close. The thing for me in this game is Philadelphia's pass defense has gotten much better. That's a little bit of a challenge for the Ravens, but they've got Derrick Henry there, right? Derrick Henry is it gives Baltimore the versatility, I think, in a home game like this. The question for me is, can Baltimore stop Philadelphia? Because Baltimore can't really stop anybody. So I'm gonna take the Ravens because they're at home. I'll lay the 3 points. I cannot wait for this game, quite honestly. I think these are two Super Bowl contenders. Nothing's going to change with the outcome for me thinking that, but I'll take the Ravens at home and take the points. Tommy?
This one's really tough because you guys gave me a Baltimore Island against the Chargers this week, and that made me go 6-0 with that Baltimore Island.
You went 6-0?
I did.
I didn't know.
We talked about that. You know what? I'd be happy to talk about it again.
I didn't know that.
I'd like to be, you know, if you're giving me the opening, I'd like to be able to talk about it again if that's okay. So my 6-0, I wasn't going to bring it up, but hey, you know, that's on you, Paul. Really, because of how my prowess in picking games, I've really liked Baltimore a lot this entire season. I don't love Philadelphia, although they're incredibly talented. I'm just not sure that in this particular setting, I can go against Philadelphia. It's weird because I took a Baltimore Island last week. I'm going to take the Eagles, though. Give me Philadelphia in this game.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like both teams are getting into the 30s in this one, for sure. All right, let's go to some college football here. KU Baylor is where we'll start. It's the earliest game of the day. This line has swung. Interestingly, Paul, as you'll lead us off on this pick, it was KU getting points 2 days ago, and now all of a sudden they're 1.5-point favorites. To me, the only reason that happens is because everybody on the planet is betting against your Baylor Bears, Paul. You're going to have a chance. You're picking first, but I'm going to tell you right now, I think there's a really good shot that you get an island here if you take your Baylor Bears.
I've got a caveat with this particular pick. Here it is. I want KU to win, but I'm not picking against Baylor. But I'm just saying right now, if I miss this one, I'll be happy. Well, I mean, not unless I've just got to make sure KU wins this game. I want KU to win because, man, we're talking about legends in the making. We're talking about stuff that we'll talk about for years and years to come. I want to see him in a bowl game. I want to see him play somebody really good in a bowl game. I think this is a great, great, great football story. This is why we all pay attention to this stuff. I'm going to take Baylor. I want KU to win. Can you believe I'm even saying that? I should have to mail back my diploma. That's probably what they're going to require me to do if this gets out.
You're rooting against
your
alma mater.
That's right.
That's tough business there, Tommy. I think I'm going to predict that he gets the island. You going to take Baylor?
No, I'm taking Kansas. I'm going to lay the points. I think that the Jayhawks are just, you know, on this roll right now, and being able to, you know, get all the way to a bowl game after they were 1-5 and then 2-6 is massive. I think that tells you just the total redemption story of this team. So I'm going to take the Jayhawks. I'll lay those points. I think they get bowl eligible in Waco on Saturday.
Look, it's trappy. You got to remember that they were dogs, according to Vegas, to begin. You got to remember it's Baylor's senior day. You got to remember that Baylor's won 5 in a row, and some of those are pretty impressive wins. It's more about Kansas than Baylor to me, and it's more about Kansas finally playing well, and it's kind of simple. I want to make it about this storyline and all these things about bowl games and redemption. But the bottom line for me is Kansas might be the most talented team in the league. It's at least in the conversation. Baylor's not, and Kansas is finally playing well. So I'll take Kansas. TJ?
I mean, KU beat 3 ranked teams in a row. What are they going to do to an unranked team? I'd pick KU against probably Georgia right now, the way that they're playing. So give me the Jayhawks outright, but I'll lay the points.
I mean, Brandon, if we've got you here, you've got Baylor, who nobody in the world is talking about, who is 7-4 now in the league. And I looked, I was like, oh, I bet they beat up on a bunch of cupcakes. And there have been a couple, but not all of them. Where are you leaning with this one, Brandon?
Yeah, sorry. Topeka does not want me to have my moment on this show. So in the last game, give me the Eagles in this game. I don't know if we're going to be talking enough about is this Lance Leipold's last game? It's Lance Leipold rumor season again. North Carolina job just came open. He's going to be rumored there. But I think he gets at least one more game. The Jayhawks are going to go on the road and a 13-game losing streak against Baylor. And they are they're going to cover this number. They're going to deliver a third straight bowl berth. Give me the Jayhawks.
That's interesting. We probably need to speculate on that a little bit. Obviously, he has a lot less coming back this year he has in some of the past. I haven't thought about that. All right, Brandon, while we have your reception, let's let you lead off here. K-State, Iowa State, Farmageddon, the Cyclones, 2.5-point home favorites. Can K-State go on the road and get it done?
This is a disgusting game to have to lead off on. I just don't know how many points there's going to be in this game. I feel like it's going to be a lot of running the ball, a lot of defense. Iowa State's great against the pass, but they're shoddy against the run. And I think that K-State's just going to lean into that. I've had zero luck picking the Cats this year, but, I mean, why go against them at this point? Give me the Cats.
Oh, Tommy. Can K-State go win this game on the road?
Yeah, I think they can. I'm going to take the Wildcats. I mean, just based off of what I saw from them against Cincinnati at home, I know this game is in Ames. But there's a lot of pride, I think, you know, on the line for Kansas State. And I know that there still is a path, albeit a really tough path, to still play for a Big 12 title game. It's still possible. And they have, you know, basically aspirations for a larger and better bowl game. So I'm going to go ahead and take Kansas State. I think that they avenged the loss last year in Farmageddon in Manhattan. I think they get it done in Ames.
Yeah, that weird snow game last year. Look, I think Avery looked healthy, and if Avery's healthy, I like the Cats. So he looked healthy. I'm going to assume he's healthy. Iowa State, I mean, you know, they had the two losses, and now they beat Cincinnati and barely beat Utah. Good for them. I think K-State's a better team, and their quarterback's finally healthy. So I'm going to take the Cats, and I'll especially take the Cats when I'm getting some points with it. Wish it was 3, but 2.5 is good enough for me. TJ?
I think that what is it whenever you're driving and your car starts to, you know, spin, you're supposed to, like, drive into it, steer into it. Well, there's absolute chaos happening in the Big 12, so we're going to steer into that. Give me every chaos scenario there can be. If KU wins that one and K-State wins this one, a lot of things get weird, so give me the Cats, because why else would the Big 12 make any sense?
Yeah, we all want that to happen. Paul, finish us off here on this one.
You know something? You guys are going to say I'm taking Iowa State because this is an island. I was going to take Iowa State if I was picking first.
Not a bad pick.
And here's why. I'm not sure K-State's playing as good as football as they're capable of playing. That's just when I look at them and I think to myself, this could be a better football team. And I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it. And I always enjoy trying to figure out what's the problem. But there's something about this team that just isn't allowing them to play up to where they could be. That worries me with a team like Iowa State. They've got their own set of problems. I understand that, but this is going to be a home game. And I think it's supposed to be pretty cold, maybe even snowy in that part. I think it might be. I'm going to go ahead and take Iowa State. And I was going to take Iowa State whether I picked first or last.
I'm surprised we all took K-State, honestly. Like, I'm surprised it even got to that point. If Avery Johnson's, if Avery Johnson is what he was in that last game, then I feel better about it. But if he's not, I sure don't. So we'll just have to see on that one. All right, we finish with the rivalry of rivalries coming back to college football. I'm so glad it's back. I wish they still played it on Friday, but they're going to play it on Saturday instead. The Longhorns, the Aggies. I think we've circled back around to you leading things off here, Tommy. Kyle Field and 5.5 points. No Quinn Ewers, I think, right? Are we official on that it's Arch Manning season? Here we go, Tommy. What do you think in this one?
Did you happen to hear anybody hear Mike Elko? I think it was after they lost to Auburn, or maybe it was before the Auburn game, where he said that all we're doing is paying attention to Texas. And, so clearly they were looking ahead to the Longhorns. I like Mike Elko. I liked him when he was at Duke. I like the hire for A&M. I've said it a couple different times, and I think that he will get A&M to be a national title contender. They're knocking on the doorstep this year, whether or not, I don't think they'll make it into the CFP. They'll be, I think right outside looking in. I think eventually he'll have them competing for a CFP. It's not going to be this year, though. I'm going to take the Longhorns. I'll lay the points. I think that Texas will win on the road, and I think they'll cover.
I'm going to go the other way. The Aggies and their fans have been waiting for this opportunity since they went to the SEC. Like, this is a long time coming. That is going to be an awesome environment. 5.5 points is a lot. I think A&M, they fell victim to looking ahead last week. They're not looking ahead anymore. Now they're ready to play the game. I'm just going to take the points and the home field advantage here at 5.5 points for me. TJ?
Yeah, I think Texas A&M is going to win this game. Look at Texas's schedule. They're the number three team in the country because they have, three ranked wins in the SEC. And then you look at the ranked wins, and none of the teams are ranked anymore. Texas' schedule hasn't been very good when you look in retrospect, looking back at it. It really is about who have they played that's really going to be worth anything. And it's Georgia, and they lost by two scores in that game. So I think the ball is finally going to drop in the last week and really start some chaos. Give me the Aggies, especially if I'm, getting points.
Brandon, which side of this are you on?
Well, every time I seem to go with Texas A&M in history, they just come back to bite me. I was on them a couple weeks ago when they were playing against South Carolina. Tied at halftime, they go on to lose that game by 21. And I also think the Yell Leaders are one of the most cringiest things in sports. I hate them. Give me the Longhorns big on the road.
Yeah, this isn't a debate on whether the Aggies, and no offense to the Aggies out there. I've got a lot of great friends who are Aggies. They're pretty weird. I don't know. I used to go down to College Station and party with some friends, and you kind of just you better just get out of the way when they get into their chanting and doing all that crazy stuff that they do. If that place is going to be lit, Paul, you know this better than anybody here, how crazy Kyle Field can be. Is it enough to beat Texas when you're getting 5.5 points at home?
Well, Jacob, of all the people on this show at this moment right now, you're the one guy that knows that is one of the toughest places to play a football game in the country, bar none. It's just crazy at Texas A&M. And just for you, you're the only one that's going to know what I'm talking about, Jacob. I'm flashing back to my old Southwest Conference days. I'm flashing back right now. Here I go, flashing back. We all hated Texas A&M. They're in that. Rice hated Texas A&M. TCU hated Texas A&M. Everybody hated Texas A&M. SMU hated them. Arkansas hated them. Everybody in the Southwest Conference hated Texas A&M. I'm taking Texas just based on pure hatred.
I don't like A&M, guys. I don't. I don't misunderstand. I went to West Texas A&M, affiliated.
No,
only
it wasn't. Not when
back,
you were there.
Back in. When I was there, it was West Texas A&M. It's West Texas State to the Missouri Valley fans that live in this region.
Okay, I didn't know. I thought you were there at the other time. Okay.
Anywho, we got it done. We got through it. I can't. That's going to be a fun game. They're all going to be fun games. It's a good week of games here, and let's all make some money. It was a bloodbath a little bit last week. I don't know how Brandon and TJ ended up, but it was not good on the betting front last week. Let's make some money here as we make it through. All right, we'll be back. Brandon, safe travels. We are going to come back and talk a little high school football. We've got some state championship games. We'll get a look ahead at some of those featuring our area teams or teams at least on our side of the bracket. TJ will do that with us when we return on Sports Daily. A lot still to come here as we wrap up a Wednesday and for us wrap up the week. So stick with us. We're coming right back.
KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody, here to Sports Daily. IHOP Hotline opening back up for you. The new Indiana Jones and the Great Circle themed limited time offer menu. All the crazy French toasts they have, including the Great Circle of Cinnamon French Toast. So get in there and check it out. That number is 869-1240. You can leave us your video comments on Facebook, on YouTube, and on X. We keep TJ here Ketchikan, Kansas comes to a fever pitch this weekend. It's state championship weekend, high school football. It's center stage. We can start, well, at the top for us is 5A now because Derby fell to Manhattan. So TJ Hayes, Hayes makes it through. I think we'd have talked about that at the beginning of season. It might surprise people, but they get Aquinas. What kind of chance does Hayes have in the 5A title game?
Yeah, it's been an awesome story. As you know, the past couple of years, we've seen Hayes pretty much get far enough in 5A to lose to Mays or, you know, lose to Eisenhower or, you know, whoever it is in the Wichita area. And they've had so much good talent. They had Jaron Kanick. They had Dylan Dreiling back when he was still the quarterback at Hayes. You know, Malik Ball last year. And it felt like this year was they kind of graduated all their stars and nobody knew who this Hayes team was going to be or if they were going to be any good. And they lost four games. And then now looking back, you look at the games that they lost, they played Manhattan and Derby, the closest that anybody played Manhattan Derby in the regular season. And that was the game to get in the 6A state championship game. So looking back, this is probably a really good Hayes team that nobody gave a lot of credit to because of how good Great Bend was as well. For them to be as battle-tested as they were, they went on the road every single game of the playoffs, got it done every single week. And now they are heading to Emporia. The gas mileage on the buses are pretty great in Hayes, as we've been saying.
I want to go back to, you mentioned Derby, and they fell last week in sub-state in 6A. It's interesting because, you know, Derby was undefeated. Manhattan, you know, no knock on them. I mean, they won the state championship a couple of years ago, so they're a great program. But Manhattan went to Derby, and Derby never even had the lead in that game. What do you make of all of that and Derby going home before the state championship?
Yeah, it's unreal. I mean, I've been telling a lot of people that Derby team on paper is probably the best team that we're going to see in the Wichita area for a couple of years and probably that we have seen in the past couple of years. I mean, they're going to have 10 or 12 Division I football players on that team. And it's unreal that they lost that game somehow. But, you know, Manhattan, I think that Coach Sharks in Manhattan is an awesome coach. Whenever you've seen them play, they won that state championship a couple of years. Coach Sharks' kid was the quarterback. And pretty much having another coach as your quarterback at that point. I didn't think this Manhattan team was as good as that Manhattan team was, but, you know, they're still Division I players. You know, Dunnigan, the wide receiver that they have is, you know, 6'4", got an offer from everybody. Their quarterback's also just super athletic. So Manhattan's a really good team. If it wasn't going to be Derby, it was going to be Manhattan, as it has been the past 5-6 years or whatever it was. So a shocking result, as you said. I'm surprised that Derby wasn't able to get that done, but Manhattan – has as good a shot as anybody to beat Gardner Edgerton. So,
you know, when I look at that 6A game, I think to myself, because I'm probably the only guy on this show at this moment who has seen a lot of film on Manhattan. I broke down some, I believe it was Dodge City and Manhattan film earlier. I think that was the game. I can't really remember, but I've seen Manhattan on film. They're really good. But on film, it's always hard to tell just how good they are until you see them live. But they didn't look as good as Derby. I've seen Derby on film, and I've seen Derby live. Fellas, I'm telling you, when you look at Derby, they look like a college football team. A college football team. That they got size, they got strength, they got muscles on their arms. They look like – so I'm just stunned that Manhattan beat them, because if memory serves right, and I'm not going to say everything about my memory at this point with these games. I see so many films that I can't keep track of them all. But anyway, I just don't remember Manhattan being good enough to beat Derby. That's the stunner for me. Does Manhattan have a chance to get Garden Edgerton?
Yeah, I mean, Gardner Edgerton's obviously one
they're
of the best
good.
Teams up in the up in they're, Kansas City as well. Right. You know, I think that they've had a really tough schedule. You know, they played the Mill Valleys and they played the other star-studded teams that are up there. So they're going to be a really good team coming in on this side as well. I know they've got some talent going Division I as well. So going to be a really good game. If I had to lean one way or the other, I'd pick Gardner Edgerton, but I also picked Derby and I was wrong there. So who knows?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Jacob. Oh. Jacob, you're muted.
Yep, sorry. We have so we have the Metro teams then, you know, in 3A and 4A. Andover Central, I think, probably is would be considered an underdog, TJ, in that game. Not seeing Bishop Meade, but knowing what they always are. And Andale's probably a fairly hefty favorite. Is that fair?
Yeah, it definitely is. Obviously, Bishop Meade, one regular season win, and they're in the state championship, and that's how it goes in Class 4A. With the way that it is, and Bishop Meade being a 4A school. So Andover Central is going to have their hands full. They've been to that state championship so many freaking times and can't get the job done. This is a really good Andover Central team, as we've said all year, that, you know, they're a team that made it all the way last year and lost to a team that's in the 5A state championship now. So that tells you what Class 4A is, and now they're playing the team that's usually there, Bishop Meade. So this is a really good Andover Central team. I like everything that they do. They're so talented and so good at what they do. They have a punching chance against Bishop Meade, but with Bishop Meade and the amount of talent that they always produce and everything, you don't like their odds a ton. But, you know, if a team from Wichita was going to get it done in Class 4A, it was going to be Andover Central. And then Andale, as you said, you know, likely heavy favorites in every game that they played this year, and they've shown it every single game. I think that they played one game that was within 10 points. It was Wellington, which was a 4A school that ended up being really, really good. And then throughout the playoffs, they've dominated everybody. This team is just so good. They're so well coached. They do everything so well, and it's just the Andale team that we're used to seeing. And you know, last year Cheney was such a stinking good football team that they got the job done. You're gonna have to be a really, really good team to beat Andale. I don't think anybody's good enough to beat Andale.
Going back to Andover Central for a second, TJ, it's a team that I know they've got the talent this year. I know Bishop Meade has won a bunch of state championships lately, but Andover Central can challenge them, I think. Is this a team, even outside of this year, for Andover Central, can they continue this and become, you know, a team that we're talking about potential 4A state champions in years to come?
Yeah, I mean, they've been there the past couple of years. So just even looking at the trends here, they found a way to be the runner-up, you know, whatever it is, 4 or 5 years now. It's kind of unreal that they're able to just kind of dominate 4A West and just not be able to get past those Kansas City schools. But, you know, this senior class that they have is a really, really good senior class. I will say that. I didn't even know that they were juniors last year. I thought that they were seniors. That's how surprised I was when I showed up to their practice week one. And I was like, wow, this is the same team that I just watched in the state championship game. So they're really talented. They have really good wide receivers. Their quarterback's really good. Maddox Archibald, their running back's really good. Dawson Rod on their offensive line is really good. And all those guys are going to go play football somewhere probably. So it'll be interesting to see how they bounce back from this. But Derek Tuttle's a really good coach, and they've always got good athletes there. So I'm sure that they're still going to find ways to kind of dominate around the city. If they can keep it up to the level that they have with this kind of historic class that they've had, it'll be interesting. But, you know, I like them as much as anybody else. So,
well, you know, you've seen so many teams. And by the way, don't you think, Tommy, we could just go ahead and cancel the Andale game? Just go ahead and give them their state championship
just
trophy.
Just hand it to them? So,
I mean, don't you think that would be okay with you, wouldn't it, TJ? Let's just go ahead and hand them that trophy. We might as well. I think it's already said and done. But I'm going to kind of – and you may not have an answer to that. I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I'm just curious what you think, because you see so much of these teams, the inside of these teams, the classes that are within a team, seniors, juniors, sophomores. You know, you almost know more than anybody else what's coming back. I'm going to ask you a question, and I want you to tell me, what is the one team that will win a state championship next year that I can keep my eye on?
Man, that's a really good question. That's a lot of real sicko looking into these teams of who's the underclassman.
You're the man for it, though.
Like that.
You're the man.
I'll think about it. It's a tough one. You know, just thinking about returning players and who's coming back. You know, Arius Finley from Derby, the running back, he's only a sophomore. I think that he's going to be a, you know, four-star running back. He's going to be a, one of the top running back prospects in the country in my eyes. And, you know, you look at East, you know, obviously they've got a lot of guys that are coming back as well, a really good underclassman class there. Great Bend, you know, obviously you still have Ian Freemer coming back next year. He's only a junior, and all the guys that they have out there. So if you want me to throw a dart, I'm going to throw one at Great Bend to at least get to the championship game.
Oh, cool.
Don't know if they can get it done or not, but they're going to be really good next year because that senior class is going to be loaded.
Ah. TJ, I think we would be remiss, by the way, to not jump down to Class 1A real quick and mention Conway Springs. You know, obviously not that far away from the Wichita Metro. They're playing for a state championship in 1A, and Conway Springs historically has been a powerhouse in high school football. There were some lean years recently, but they made it back to the 1A state championship game, and I think this is a team, just knowing the talent they've got, especially offensively, they could absolutely win the state championship.
Yeah, you know, I watched them a decent amount last year, went down and talked to them. They had Braden Coons, who's a running back, who's now at Northwest Missouri State. He won the Catchy Award for best football player, if that means anything to you. So, really good running back. I mean, the dude would put up 300-yard rushing games last year and the year before that, the first couple of years that I watched Conway Springs. And watching that, is just like, wow, the running back is really good, and that's what makes them go. He graduated, and they still haven't had anybody kind of close to him, you know, because that's how good their offense is. They run that single wing, and now knowing that's the same offense they've ran back in the 70s. Whenever you have Mitch Holtis referencing your offense, whenever he's calling Chiefs games, then you're doing something right.
You're doing something good.
It's awesome what they do. It's so fun to watch them play.
And here I am just thinking about chicken wings, because it's almost Thanksgiving, you know, whatever. turkey wings. Did we make turkey wings? TJ, what do we have with coverage coming up? Because it's a little different than usual when we get to state championships.
Yeah, they changed the rules of how these games are going to get held, and they're going to make everything a lot better, I think. You know, obviously the way it used to be is that everybody played pretty much at the exact same time in 8 different locations, and if you wanted to pick one, you had to pick one of what you were going to watch. So this year they're moving it down. They've got 3 games in Emporia, 6-5-4. They've got 3 in Hutch of 3-2-1. They've got 3 in Kiowa County of 8-man-1, 8-man-2, and 6-man. We've got some good 6-man. We had some 6-man coverage on the Catch of Kansas show as well. Love 6-man football. I know you do. You're from Texas. So it's going to be a lot of fun with all of that. I know that we've got one local team playing Friday night, southeast of Saline, which we're going to talk to today on 12 News as well. They play 6 o'clock Friday night. The rest of the teams are going to play on Saturday. We're going to have coverage of every single local team. We've got a Catch at Kansas show Friday night where we're going to kind of preview what's to come on Saturday as well as those southeast of Saline highlights, and then we're going to have one on Saturday as well. So a lot of coverage. If you have, you know, more thoughts about what we're going to talk about on Saturday for these games, you know, we're going to have a 30-minute show breaking down pretty much every single game, so it should be a lot of fun.
It's always fun. CatchItKansas.com is the place to be. 12 News is the place to get it all. TJ, we appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving. I'll see you a little bit later here on the TV set.
Absolutely. I'm going to go take off my Hawaiian shirt, put on the 12 News shirt, and go to work.
I'm going to assume that is your fiance there on it.
Yep. Fiance holding the ring. That's the bachelor party.
Are those pineapples on that shirt?
Yeah, no, be careful. Be careful.
No pineapple.
I have a similar set of swimming trunks with my wife.
With my fiance's face on it?
No, but my wife. But I'll let you guys. I'll let you guys guess where I placed her face on the swimming trunks.
Hey, this is a family show.
Oh my gosh!
Use your imagination. Oh my gosh! Use your imagination. You know, jokes, you got to take them when you can get them. You always have to take advantage. She didn't know I had them. I surprised her at a big pool party with them. It's great. Everyone thought it was funny except her.
I'm sure it was a big pool party, if you know what I mean.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, Tommy. Tommy. That's
right. All right. Well, before we get a call from the FCC, we're going to take
it. Okay.
And on the way out, I'll tell you about Crestview Country Club. We appreciate their support of the program. So we got the big Thanksgiving things coming. They just put out their January calendar. I'm looking at this, Tommy. There's a casino night. There is a symphony member mixer, a prime rib night, a wine tasting. They got it all covered for you. Give them a call. There's all kinds of memberships. You can participate in some of this stuff, even if you don't do the golf or anything like that. So we appreciate their support. Tell them we sent you. We're going to come back. We're going to have our last full segment of the week, if you can believe it, on Sports Daily. Don't go anywhere. Stick around.
97.5 and 1240.
You got the Chiefs Kingdom show coming up tonight at 6 o'clock, so we'll have that for you. Let's talk a little college hoops here as it pertains to Wichita State, fellas. They play tomorrow, 11 a.m., against Minnesota. Here's the interesting thing about what they've got coming in this event. We know it'll be Minnesota and then either Florida or Wake Forest. I wonder, Tommy, did you realize, like, Wichita State's ahead in the KenPom right now of both Minnesota and Wake Forest. So I'll be curious to see what the lines for these games are. But look, when you hear that, I think you can look at this. And Florida's, you know, regarded very, very highly so far. But, at least in the Minnesota game, they've got some winnable games here and some games I think that could really, really help them. Both Minnesota and Wake Forest are top, 100 KenPom teams right now. But this is a critical part of the season for Wichita State.
It is. And if they end up facing Florida, that's a game that you could absolutely look back on come Selection Sunday as a really, really crucial game for Wichita State. I mean, Florida is a top 20 KenPom team right now. As you mentioned, they're really highly regarded. I think going into the game tomorrow, at least, they've got an opportunity against a Minnesota team that is, they're okay. I mean, they're 90th in the KenPom right now. They're 5-1, so they're off to a good start, at least in non-con play. I don't know if we know much about them this early on, but I think for Minnesota, from their perspective, they need a win against a Wichita State type opponent that's above them currently in the KenPom for a quality victory. So it's going to be a fun matchup either way.
Paul, these opportunities for Wichita State, and look, we saw Memphis beat UConn, and maybe the American will get itself into a situation where you can get a lot of high quality games in the non-con. But right now, we look at these sort of games as the ones you need to build a resume upon. Is it too early in the season to add that kind of urgency, do you think, from this coaching staff to your players and let them know, like, these games now will matter later?
No, and it's a great point. Minnesota, just, an average so-so team. I mean, I get that. They're 90th in the KenPom. We get that. They're not world beaters. But you know what they are, guys? I'll tell you what they are. They're a Power 5 conference teams. Psychologically, you've got to get wins against these teams. If you're going to have success in a tournament, you're going to have success in the AAC, then you have got to make sure that you can beat teams like Minnesota or any team that they line up in front of you who is from a Power 5 conference. You got to do it. There is something about these kind of teams that Wichita State, those kids live for these kind of games. I want to play a Big Ten team. I want to play an SEC team. I want to play a Big 12 team. That's what they live for. So have success, get the job done, get the win, and show that you can play with any Power 5 conference. Granted, they're not going to be Big Ten champions, but I can tell you right now, you want that win against a Power 5 conference.
There are right now inside the top 100 of the KenPom, just for reference sake, 4 American Athletic Conference teams in there. So these are the kinds of games where if you're looking for quad ones and quad twos, who knows? Like, you just can't, there's a lot of urgency.
Right.
I should say, in a lot of these games, there's not a lot of urgency and not a lot of implications. They're still great games. There are implications in this game for Wichita
State.
Quality
non-con wins. When you get to March, especially in an American conference where, Memphis looks like, they're going to be, I think, probably a quality team. There might be a couple of others in the American. You've got to get your non-con and you've got to do well in that.
Right.
And if it's going to be a two-bid league, you need the league needs games like this.
Yeah,
like
that's
Memphis,
right.
Beating UConn. Like, those are helpful to the entire league. So we'll watch it. You'll hear it. We'll tell you how you can hear it, where you can hear it, and everything else coming in a busy programming week next on Sports Daily.